This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Jonna Knappenberger joins me live on the long line. She's a recent graduate of the College of William & Mary. She studied anthropology and philosophy, and she was in Haiti, as a matter of fact, right near Port-au-Prince during the earthquake. Jonna, thanks for joining me. Tell me first, what took you to Haiti?
Sure. I went to Haiti with my boyfriend, Landon Yerrington. He is a doctoral student at William & Mary in anthropology. He was sort of getting his fieldwork situated for the next summer. So in anthropology, usually people go for about a year, so he was preparing his year, and I was going along for the first time to learn the language and to learn the culture.
So you go to you go to Haiti. Your boyfriend's studying anthropology, going to do some field work there. And tell me first your initial reactions once you got on the ground. What was it like in the days before the earthquake? What's Haiti like?
Well, we were there for a couple of weeks before the earthquake. We were lucky to be traveling with a new organization that wants to sort of unite many of the efforts on the ground already for development in the country. So we traveled with them around the country. We went up to the north to Cap Haitien, and then we went to the south and Port-au-Prince. And Haiti is a wonderful place. It has a beautiful language. It's just very rich and colorful, and the people there are more than wonderful. They were more than wonderful to us. We made many very good friends.
We're talking with Jonna Knappenberger of Charlottesville, a recent graduate of the College of William & Mary. Were you struck by the fact that, you know, here in America, when it comes to media coverage of Haiti, let's admit it, it's always about how poor the people are, you know, the poorest nation in the Western Hemisphere. And that is the story. When you got down there and you saw for yourself what it was really like, if I hear you right, there was poverty, of course, but there was also a whole nother story to Haiti.
That's right. We actually met one of the women who works at the national television station in Port-au-Prince, and we were talking about news that we hear in the States, and she summed it up perfectly. She said, in IT, we have misère, so misery, we have in Haiti, but we also have la vie, we have life, and she just lit up when she said life, and that is exactly how it was. And that's how it will continue to be.
So where were you the morning of the earthquake? Tell us, in the morning when you woke up. I'm curious, where were you that day?
That morning, we were staying for the last couple of days of our visit. We were going to be hanging out and staying in a place called Delma, which is a part of Port-au-Prince. And we were staying at a family, friends of ours. And so the last couple of days were just for us sort of just to relax and learn more and have interviews with our friends before we left. So that morning we woke up and did all the normal things, took a shower, felt wonderful because it was nice and hot there. And then we were hanging out and took our friend, her daughter, to school that morning. And then later that afternoon we were sitting and they call Shita and Pale, sort of sitting and talking with friends. And that's pretty much what we're doing the whole day. Before we left the neighborhood, we were eating dinner that our host had prepared for us. And it was crab and rice and beans. I forget what it's called in Creole right now, but it was a delicious.
Yeah. We're talking with Jonna Knappenberger of Charlottesville, a recent graduate of the College of William & Mary. So you were literally in Port-au-Prince then, the day of the earthquake. You'd done some traveling around the country, but the actual day of the earthquake, you were right there at the epicenter.
Yes. I think the epicenter was located in Carrefour, which is just south of Port-au-Prince. So there are other places besides Port-au-Prince that were very badly affected.
Right.
But obviously, you know, Port-au-Prince is very bad off.
So tell us now, what time, it was in the afternoon, the earthquake, right?
Yeah, I think it was about 5 o'clock. We were sitting on the back of a a car, on the trunk of a car with our friends, and the car started bouncing. So we thought there were children on the front, on the hood of the car, so we all kind of smiled and looked around to see who's bouncing the car. And that's when we realized no one was there. And we ended up, all of us went to the middle of the street. So we were lucky to be out there in the first place, and we all ran to the middle of the street and sort of ducked down. And that's when the earthquake kind of rumbled in from across the city. We kind of heard it coming, kind of like thunder. And then the earth, it seemed like waves kind of earth coming up and hitting us, and we were sort of bouncing.
Donna Knappenberger of Charlottesville was in Port-au-Prince the day of the earthquake, and we're talking to her live, her story about what happened. So you were fortunately, thank God, you were actually outside. You weren't in a building. You were outside in a street, sitting on the back of a car. Tell me again, first of all, before we talk about what you saw, tell me again what it sounded like.
It was kind of like... Well, we felt some of the shaking, so it was at the same time as the shaking started, but it sounded like thunder, but more heavy, and I'm not sure if that was the earth or the buildings or both of them kind of moving before we started moving.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, and as it was happening, of course, the sounds continued and got worse as we were going through the worst of it, and a huge cloud of dust started rising from the streets, because the streets there aren't all quite paved correctly. They're very rocky and dusty anyways. So this huge cloud just sort of came up over the city.
And what did you hear during the earthquake? How long did it last? It lasted about 20-something seconds, I remember reading somewhere. The first one, not the aftershocks, but the initial most severe earthquake.
I'm not sure. It seemed like a very long time. My friend was looking, he was on his knees, and he was looking in my face and raising his arms up to the sky, just saying, "Bon Dieu, bon Dieu, bon Dieu," which means God, God, God. I think we were all wondering how long it was going to go on. It seemed like it was minutes, so I'm not sure how long it was.
Were there people out in the street with you? Were there others outside who rushed to the middle of the street to avoid falling buildings?
Yeah, there were people running out. Landon was yelling at them, kempe, kempe, which means stay put, don't go. He was trying to tell them not to go near the walls or the houses. And some people were listening to him. But it was only a handful on that street, because this was just a neighborhood.
And what did you see?
Once the shaking stopped and the dust was rising, we were all kind of shocked, and the houses were obviously not doing so well. That block was not so bad, but the houses weren't very safe. And a water main or some sort of water line broke while we were standing there. So that was, we realized that there were other dangers like electricity and water happening. And we saw people walking toward us with a lot of dust on their eyelashes. And I remember thinking that was just beautiful, that how the dust sort of settled on their eyelashes. And then we ended up walking towards the house we were staying at, and we wanted to get back and see how the family was doing. And luckily they were all okay, except one woman who works in the house. She was trapped, and so we don't know what happened to her. But the children in the family and the adult women were all out in the street, of course, very shaken up, but still alive. And the whole street, that whole street was pretty much decimated, too.
So the buildings, most of the buildings on that street had collapsed.
Yeah, they'd all pancaked down. And I remember looking up into the room that we were staying in. Previously, you couldn't see it because there were walls, but I was able to see the mirror from the dresser through all the rubble.
So the house you had been in did partially collapse?
Oh, definitely. It was not safe at all. And there were houses on the street. Most of them were totally down, and some of them had corrugated tin for their roofs, and it was just sort of crumpled, like like paper kind of crumpled there.
Johanna Knappenberger has joined us live. She was in Port-au-Prince during the earthquake. She's from Charlottesville and recently graduated from the College of William & Mary, where she studied anthropology and philosophy. She and her boyfriend were in Haiti. He's a graduate student at George Mason and is preparing for his fieldwork in anthropology and will be studying the Haitian culture.
He's a graduate student at William & Mary.
Graduate student at William & Mary, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
So, Johanna, pick up the story then, you know, just in those hours after the earthquake. Tell us what was going on and what you saw.
Well, I was amazed by the simultaneous solidarity and chaos at the time. I was amazed by the sort of religious reaction that everyone was having. There was a lot of praying and singing and holding and loving going on at the same time as all of this destruction and grief. There were impromptu church services pretty much everywhere we looked. On that street, there were a lot of wounded people walking around at first, trying to find out who could help them. And they would come up and ask us, they would come up and ask anybody to help them. Some people were just walking around shocked, and they were perfectly fine, but they're just totally shocked. So Landon decided to try and organize that street, which is called Rue Verna. He was trying to organize that street to bring all of their wounded and hurt people into one field, a small field that was located sort of right on that street. And he was doing that so that the UN or some sort of aid eventually could find all of those people quickly. And so he was passing the message. Something clicked in him, and it was he was pretty much automatically fluent and able to organize these people to pass the message all the way down the street to bring all of their wounded to that spot. And then he found, while he was there, a medical student who was Haitian. Samuel was trying to help him do basic first aid, anything that they could do, including Landon ripped his shirt to tie a tourniquet for someone's arm. There's nothing left to do, so he just was able to hold people and talk to them and pray with them.
We're talking live with Johanna Knappenberger of Charlottesville, a graduate of the College of William & Mary. She was in Port-au-Prince during the earthquake. Night fell soon after the earthquake. And so what was that like, and where did you stay that night?
We were afraid. I realized that the night was coming very quickly. And Landon looked at me and said, "Tonight will be a night with no light," which I think was very poetic at the time. And I knew that the electricity cords were broken all over the city, so there wasn't going to be any electricity, and the cords were dangerous, and they were laying all over the road. You know, things were still falling, glass was breaking, people were still very upset and sad and grieving, pretty much everywhere grieving. Still, the church services continued, and still, you know, you see people loving each other, trying to get over this, but we ended up going out to the main street, which sort of connects this neighborhood with downtown Port-au-Prince, and trying to get the Haitian police and the UN, pretty much anyone who might be able to take note of this place where all these wounded people had gathered in this neighborhood, anyone who might be able to either send relief there right away or just know that's where that neighborhood had put them. So we tried to do that, and then eventually I got into a UN car with two Pakistani UN workers who were kind enough to drive me to the MINUSTAH headquarters, which is located at the end of the runway at the airport. And Landon stayed in Delma, and he tried to do more for that neighborhood, and eventually found a ride with a Haitian police officer back to the MINUSTAH headquarters, and we were reunited about 3 hours later, after we separated.
Did you get a chance to, whether you were in a car or walking, did you get a chance to get out and see the extent of the devastation for yourself?
when we were walking around, coming from that one neighborhood to where we were staying, it was pretty obvious how much had been devastated, and we both realized we had been going around Port-au-Prince for a couple of days, and we had been there earlier in the trip, too, for a couple of days, so we knew the state of the city. As far as architecture in Haiti, there are no government standards, and if they are, they're only on paper. Really, Haiti is all about ingenuity and sort of figuring out how you and your family can do well and have a good place to live. So it's not necessarily about what's the most safe building practices. So when it happened, we both sort of realized that the damage was going to be very widespread.
And you saw that for yourself, yeah?
Yeah, just on a kind of micro level. Personally, I needed to keep myself composed enough to be able to think clearly, so I couldn't help as much as I probably should have, or as much as Landon could. I was trying to minimize the shock to my mental state. So I talked to some of our friends that were okay. I hugged them, and I talked to a few people who I had met earlier, and a few people who I didn't know. And I tried not to look too much.
Yeah, well, that's understandable in the face of that tragedy. Recent reports I've heard they're raising the estimate of the death toll from this earthquake could be upwards of 200,000 people.
And yeah, and I heard that when we were at the UN base, we got news of the Haitian government official who said that it might be 100,000, and it really wasn't a surprise. And the American police officers who were taking care of us on the base, they were not shocked at all, and they told us about how when the bodies started piling on the roads and stuff, they told us as many details as we needed to know.
Yeah, yeah. As you say, more details than you need. So before we let you go, I'm just curious it seems like a lot of the news story now has become about the rescue effort and what's going on the part of other countries, especially the United States, to get in there as quickly as possible. Do you have any thoughts on this?
Well, when we were sitting at the UN, it was going through my mind that the United States will help, and they'll help us get out, and they will help. We know that the United States is a very generous, loving nation. So I think that I was also thinking that the damage is in Port-au-Prince, and that the only working airport is Port-au-Prince. Of course, it's all backed up at this point, and it has been for a couple of days. But I think there are other areas of Haiti that were probably just as bad or worse in their damage. So the aid needs to disperse from Port-au-Prince. That's my opinion. And as much as the Red Cross does, as much as all those wonderful organizations do that are really very, very big and very powerful and helpful, there are smaller organizations that are Haitian-based that have been operating in Haiti for a long time that are also very effective. So I would suggest maybe considering those organizations as platforms for aid.
Right, organizations that are already there and have been there for a long time, more local, yeah. Johanna Knappenberger of Charlottesville recently graduated from the College of William & Mary. She was in Haiti with her boyfriend, an anthropologist, preparing for his field work there, and they were in Port-au-Prince during the earthquake. Thank you so much, Johanna, for taking some time to share this story with us. As I told you on the phone, I think it's so important that we keep this in public consciousness, because there's this isn't something that's going to go away, you know, next week. This is going to be a news story for a long, long time as well. It should be, because there is so much work that needs to be done there to help people. And, you know, people are dying as we speak for lack of help that hasn't reached them yet. And it's just a tragedy on so many levels. And, you know, thank God that you and the people close to you down there survived this.
Yes. I always say that Haiti didn't deserve much that was happening to it before Tuesday, and it didn't deserve, no one deserves, but it didn't deserve some of the terrible things that are happening to it now. So I think that you're absolutely right.
Jonna Knappenberger. Thanks, Jonna. I appreciate it. You take care.
Thank you, Coy.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.